Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog.
This is the preview spotlight for the July 2012 previews. These items should start hitting store shelves in September 2012. Now, as always, we're going to go from the front to the back of previews. We are not going to go page by page or item by item because it's still a huge, huge catalog. I remember years back they promised they were going to trim it down. I don't know that they have. We have an open submission policy on these episodes. Anyone is welcome to send in clips. We strongly encourage that. That includes creators, marketing people at comic book publishers, publishers themselves, janitors at the companies, podcasters, listeners, anyone you bump into on the street that doesn't mind having a microphone shoved in their face. No, seriously. Anyone who's interested in comic and thinks other people would be too, please. Record a short clip, let us know. This is how we find out about new things. This is how our listeners find out about new things. I've gotten onto a lot of different titles over the years because somebody said, hey, I think you'll like this. I tried it. Sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. But there were a lot of books that I'd seen for years and never tried because I didn't realize it would be for me. Walking Dead was one of them. Toopy Doops was another. Elephant Man. I mean, the list goes on.
Yep, I agree, and I think that every month when people, you know, tell us about things, almost every month there's something that somebody mentions that it causes me to rethink, you know, whether I should give something a try or not. That's what I like to hear, somebody talking about why they had something catch their eye.
So, shall we start listening to the clips?
Sure. Now, one thing that is interesting to point out, though, before we do that, because I don't know how much of a emphasis there are on the clips on this, not as much as there maybe should be, but we got the 0 month from DC, right? So wanted to just mention that a little bit because, you know, we had the relaunch of the New 52 a year ago, and instead of doing issue 13... they're doing issue zeros of all the mainstream DC books, and we're getting, you know, kind of, are they all supposed to be like 5 years before, kind of like the
origin? I don't know if they're still or... 5 years before, but it is kind of an origin thing. The one that is worth giving a little special attention to is the DC Universe Presents. That's going to have stories for a lot of the titles that ended. So OMAC, Frankenstein, some of those characters. So if you liked those titles, sorry to see them go. This is a good place you can get another story about those characters.
That comes with a hefty price tag, though, doesn't it? I seem to recall.
Yes, it does. That's a $5.99 item. It's on page 94. So this is kind of an impromptu clip. But it's going to have Blackhawks, Hawk and Dove, Mr. Terrific, and OMAC. And I think this may have been stuff that they had originally planned to do the zero issues had those titles stuck around long enough. But that's just conjecture on my part.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a cool way if you have been thinking about some title in the New 52 but have not actually pulled the trigger on it. You know, these might actually be a way to get a taste of a series that, in theory, is not going to have a lot of pre-existing continuity that you know, even 12 issues worth that you need to worry about. This will be, you know, right at the beginning, giving you the origin of something. So give it
a
try.
And these should be pretty standalone issues in terms of done-in-one stories, hopefully. Now shall we go to the clips?
Now we can go to the clips.
All right. Starting us off in Dark Horse on page 36 is Ghost Number 1. This is written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, who's doing the new Captain Marvel series over, well, unsurprisingly, at Marvel. And the art's going to be by Phil Noto. I'm really looking forward to that part of the stuff. Phil Noto's a great artist. This is a character that came out of the America's Greatest World, or I forget the exact name. It was the line of superhero titles that Dark Horse did in the 90s, back when everybody was trying their own little superhero universe and stuff. And this was one of the most interesting characters of the bunch. I think they have revisited the character a time or two since then. I'm hoping this will be a nice entry point for new readers. It's a zero issue, so it should be. They're saying it's perfect for fans of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's different enough, but similar enough. I think that's probably going to be very true. This is something that I'm really glad they're bringing this character back. I think they've let this character sit kind of in limbo off store shelves and stuff for too long. I really enjoyed Ghost when it came out. And again, Phil Noto on the art looks really good. They've got two pages of art to look at, with the dialogue and stuff on page 37. We've got a 50% discount on this through DCBS. Again, pages 36 and 37. Ghost number zero from Dark Horse Comics. Check it out.
Hey all, it's Joe with TaxAdviceGuys.com with my first pick of the month out of the Dark Horse section, the Nexus Omnibus Volume 1 trade paperback on page 41. Mike Baron and Steve Rude's space opera finally collected in order. Buckle up, space fans, sci-fi fans, we're about to have a great ride. If you've never read the Nexus story at all, I highly recommend this. This is the first 14 issues. Volume 1, issues 1 through 3, and Volume 2, issues 1 through 11. Cover price is $24.99. However, DCBS has it at a discount of 50%. So $12.49 for 14 issues. That works out to just about 89 cents an issue. You can't beat that. I highly recommend this. Can't say enough great things about it. And with that, I'm going to hand this back over to the guys.
Hello, this is Derek Royal with the upcoming brand new podcast, The Comics Alternative. And my first pick of the month is on page 42 of previews in the Dark Horse section, and it is Fatima, The Blood Spinners, number 4. If you listened to the previews episode a couple of months ago, you would have heard me talking about Fatima then, and I'll praise it now just as I did a couple of months ago. I've read the first issue of Fatima, and I think it's great, and I look forward to the next three. The catalog describes the concluding issue number 4 this way. Love & Rockets co-creator Gilbert Hernandez brings his freakish tale to date to a conclusion only he could dream up. Trapped in the future, Fatima and her fellow zombie hunters discover a civilization even more ravaged than they could have imagined, as they face giant mutants and the possibility that they are the last remaining humans. Can they save the world? And can love bloom among the ruins? If you've heard me before on this podcast, you know how much of a big fan of the Hernandez brothers I am, and not just of Gilbert, but of his brothers Mario and especially Jaime. And the thing about Gilbert's work independently is that it tends to have a strange, otherworldly, psychedelic, supernatural spin to it. And we have that definitely here in Fatima with the zombies. So be sure to check out the concluding issue of Fatima, The Blood Spinners, issue number 4. And now, back to the guys.
Hey guys, Damien here again with another pick for the month, which is The Creep number 1, written by John Arcudi, artist is Jonathan Case, and Mike Mignola does the cover for it. This one looks interesting, sort of caught my interest there when I went through a couple of times through all the online solicits. So you've got a pair of teenage suicides raised a terrible question, raise terrible questions, actually, but can a grim private eye commit himself to a case that's so closely connected to his own haunted past? It looks to be an interesting type thing. Now, I haven't actually read anything more than literally the solicit there, but as you've got a quote there by Joe R. Lansdale saying, great mystery involving Rondo Hatton lookalike from the B-film Creeper fame. So it looks to be interesting. It's something that I want to pick up. It's 32 pages and $3.50. It's in stores on September 12th from what it says here, and it's one that I'm really going to look forward to and see what it's like. Okay, I'll be back with some more.
Hello, this is Derek again from the soon-to-be-launched podcast, The Comics Alternative, and my next pick of the month appears on page 68 of previews in the Dark Horse section, and it is the hardcover collected edition of Marked Man by Howard Chaykin. Now, if you've been reading Dark Horse Presents, especially those earlier issues, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. Marked Man was collected in issues 1 through 8 of Dark Horse Presents, and what Dark Horse has done now is to take all of those installments and collect it in one volume. And the catalog describes the product this way. To the casual observer, Mark Lafarge has it going on. He's got a beautiful wife, cute kids, a McMansion in the South Bay. The guy is the living embodiment of the American dream. But nothing is ever as it seems. Lafarge is a career criminal who's never done an honest day's work in his life. And that life of crime, completely separate from life he presents to the world, is about to catch up with him. And there will be blood. A great deal of blood. Chaykin must be a rather hot property now at the publisher, because not only are they coming out with this collected Marked Man hardcover edition, but just last month they launched the second volume of Black Kiss. And if you know anything about the first volume that appeared in the 1980s, Black Kiss, it's a rather intriguing work, to say the least. So be sure to check out Marked Man by Howard Chaykin, and it appears on page 68, where you can get not only a good description, but on page 69, a sample page from the comic. Marked Man by Howard Chaykin. And now, back to the guys. This is Derek again from the upcoming new podcast, The Comics Alternative, and my next pick of the month appears on page 73, again in the Dark Horse section. Another crime narrative. This one, Crime Does Not Pay, volume number 3. This is the latest installment in the ongoing Crime Does Not Pay archives. I think it's wonderful that Dark Horse is finally bringing all of these comics back into print. I'm very much into comic book history. I'm fascinated not only by the growth of the superhero genre and other kind of mainstream genres, but also what happened in the 1940s and 50s that eventually helped to bring about the comics code. And Crime Does Not Pay, as a title, is definitely one of those that figures prominently in this history. The first two volumes, or at least the first volume, the one that I have now, is just incredible. And in a few months, we will get volume 3 of Crime Does Not Pay Archives, published by Dark Horse. Check it out. Very good stuff. Back to the guys.
Next up on page 83 is The Phantom Stranger number 0. This is written by Dan Didio with art by Brent Anderson and Scott Hanna. Brent Anderson, best known probably for his work over on Astro City. Dan Didio has done some writing and obviously is one of the co-publishers of DC. Last we saw the Phantom Stranger, and really I think the only time we've seen him in the New 52, was in the Free Comic Book Day story that they did this past year. If you did not check that out, or you've got it and haven't read it, whatever, check it out. It seems to be very much a key backstory element for The Phantom Stranger, Pandora, and surprisingly enough, The Question. This is going to give us more information on, you know, really what's going on with this character and I think those other three. There's talk about the Trinity War or whatever coming up, and I think the Trinity's going to be Phantom Stranger, Question, and Pandora. I could be wrong on that. But this looks like it'll be potentially some very key backstory for the New 52. If you're into the big picture stuff, it's worth checking out. If you're into the Phantom Stranger, it's worth checking out. Again, Brent Anderson on the art, along with Scott Hanna. Brent Anderson's done some great work over on Astro City and stuff. Dan Didio, I'll be honest, his writing sometimes works. I think he did some great stuff with the Metal Men in Wednesday Comics. He's had a couple of things that just didn't quite click with me. You know, some of his recent work on Outsiders and stuff like that prior to the Flashpoint relaunch. But it'll be interesting to see how this goes and how this is going to play into, like I said, the big picture for the New 52. So, Phantom Stranger, number 0 on page 83, $2.99 comic. We've got a 50% discount. Check it out. Next up on the following page, page 84, is Sword of Sorcery number 0. And I know at some point I'm going to refer to this as Sword and Sorcery, but it's Sword of Sorcery. And this is going to feature Amethyst. Now, Amethyst originated as a 12-issue maxi series back in the 80s. I forget if it was early or mid-80s. And it's basically you've got a girl who goes to a, you know, parallel fantasy world, and she's a young teen on Earth, but a, you know, young woman there. And you get all of those, you know, fantasy elements. And it was really a fun story. The Gem World had, you know, there was the Topaz group, the Amethyst group, obviously, and the different gemstones and stuff like that. And it gave it a fairly easy mythology to kind of get the gist of. Each group had different personalities and whatnot, different looks. And it was I think aimed more towards, you know, young girls or whatever, but it was very much accessible and appropriate for all readers. I thought it was a fun series, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do as they bring the character back. The writer is Christy Marks, who's done a lot of TV series such as G.I. Joe, Transformers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I'm hoping it's going to be, an all-ages friendly kind of a thing. In other words, I don't want something that's dark, grim, gritty, you know, over-realistic or whatever. Art's going to be by Aaron Lopresti and Matt Ryan. And Aaron Lopresti, I think, is just a terrific artist. He's been doing some great work lately over on Justice League International. Prior to that, he's done Wonder Woman. He's really been doing a lot of things from a lot of publishers over the last decade. And he's very talented. I think this will really play to his strengths very well. I'm looking forward to seeing that. The backup story is a post-apocalyptic wasteland starring Beowulf. And that seems like a very odd juxtaposition to put with Amethyst, but, you know, we'll see how that works. And because they're calling it Sword of Sorcery, I'm expecting at some point both the lead and the backup feature might get swapped out for something else. But for the moment, I'm very much looking forward to the return of Amethyst and seeing both the new take on that character and how she fits into the new 52. So, page 84, Sword of Sorcery number 0. It's a $3.99 comic, 40 pages. Again, it's got that backup feature. 50% off through DCBS. Check it out.
Hello, this is Derek once again from the upcoming new podcast, The Comics Alternative, and my next pick of the month appears on page 140 of the previous catalog, and it's in the Vertigo section, Fables, Werewolves of the Heartland. This is a hardcover, an original graphic novel, and it's part of the ongoing Fables mega narrative. I'm a big Fables fan. Bill Willingham does an incredible job with the series. I've thought that at times, maybe recently, it's flagged a bit. So I'm really looking to this Werewolves of the Heartland original graphic novel to kind of pump up the Fables world once again. The catalog describes the graphic novel this way. Bigby Wolf takes center stage in what might be the most action-packed Fable story to date. Bigby embarks on a quest through the American heartland to find a new location for Fabletown. In his wanderings, Bigby stumbles across a small town named Story City that, amazingly enough, seems to be populated by werewolves. Who are they, and where did they come from? They aren't fables, but they sure aren't normal Mundies. They seem to already know and revere Bigby, but at the same time, they've captured and caged him. But why? Unraveling the many mysteries of Story City may cost Bigby more than his life. Just in that relatively brief description, I think you can get a lot of good stuff from what this is going to be about. It obviously plays into the ongoing storyline that we have over the past several months in Fables. They're trying to find a new home after Mr. Dark destroys what they had in New York. And another thing is he comes to a city, Bigby comes to a city called Story City. One of the things I've loved about Fables is not only does it take these well-known fables that we've all grown up with and to create them and make their story a little different in a contemporary world, but it's also a comic book series that is very much aware of the very act of telling stories, of what tales are all about. So I think the name of that city is rather appropriate. Be sure to check it out. Fables, Werewolves of the Heartland. By Bill Willingham, art by Jim Fern, Craig Hamilton, Ray Snyder, and Mark Farmer. Bob and John, back to you.
Next up in IDW, we've got Star Trek 13. This is on page 154. The premise, the title alone of this story, I saw that and it's like, yep, gotta get it. Now I'm getting the series anyways. I'd have gotten it anyways. But even if I wasn't, The Red Shirt's Tale. I mean, the title alone, I think, sells the story. I mean, everyone knows the joke that, you know, whoever beams down with the classic Trek crew wearing the red shirt, well, they may not be beaming back up to the Enterprise. And this is kind of a standalone story that shows, you know, what it's like to live on the Enterprise if you're one of those lucky guys wearing that red shirt. It sounds like just a, you know, premise with a lot of potential. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it. I've been very pleased with the Star Trek ongoing comic, and it seems very true to what they're doing in the movies, really capturing the spirit and essence of Star Trek. So it sounds like a fun comic. $3.99 comic. It's coming from IDW. That's kind of their standard price. We got a 50% discount on it. Again, page 154. Worth checking out.
Hello, this is Ian Gowan, and I'm a fan of this podcast. And this month, a comic I'm excited about is Star Trek The Next Generation Hive number 1. And it is from IDW. On page 155 of the previews catalog. Now, the writers are Brannon Braga and Terry Metalis, and the art is by Joe Caroni. And the two writers both worked on scripts for the a few different Trek television series, I believe The Next Generation, and also Star Trek Enterprise. And the artist, Joe Caroni, has done a ton of covers for IDW, including covers for G.I. Joe, True Blood, and of course Star Trek. And so I'm interested to see what he's going to do for interiors on this next-gen comic book. And if you can't tell by the title Hive, this is going to be a story about the Borg. Now, the Borg are some of the creepiest villains ever created for Star Trek, and they are half-humanoid, half-machine. Cyborgs usually taking over or simulating other civilizations and often repeating the phrase, resistance is futile. And I think your resistance to this is going to be futile when you learn that DCBS has this at 50% off or $1.99, down from $3.99. Now, we haven't seen a Next Generation comic in a while from IDW. I think it's been about 2 years. But this comic is scheduled to be released this year on September 19th, and I look forward to it. Thanks, Bob and John.
Next up on page 157 is Doctor Who number 1. Now, this is one that, you know, they've been doing a Doctor Who series actually for a couple of years now, and they've periodically renumbered it, often in a point where they've, you know, changed creative teams and stuff like that. We're going to have Andy Diggle writing it. We're going to have Mark Buckingham on the art and cover. This is going to have, obviously, the current Doctor, the 11th Doctor, and it's going to have the final comic adventures of Amy and Rory. I've been loving this series. I love Doctor Who since they've been reviving it and stuff on the TV stuff. These comics IDW has been doing have really captured the spirit of the show, the sensibility of the show, the characters of the show just incredibly well. You know, it reads like you're watching the TV series in all the right ways. And I'm looking forward to them kind of, you know, really the fact that they're relaunching it with a number one is almost incidental. This could have been, you know, number whatever of the previous series. The fact they're renumbering it, honestly, I don't mind just because they've done such a great job with the property. And if this gets a couple of more readers on board, so be it. I think that's just good for everybody. And really, IDW is doing a great job with this property, Star Trek, the Star Trek Doctor Who crossover they're doing. If you're into any of the properties IDW's doing and you haven't checked out their comics, take a look. It's worth checking out. Doctor Who number 1 is another $3.99 comic, 32 pages. That's a standard price point over at IDW. And it's a fair price, particularly since on a lot of these they are having to pay the license fee, whatever, and they're doing a good job with those licenses, like I said. So, page 157, Doctor Who number 1, check it out.
Hey guys, it's Damien here with my first pick for the month, and it's from IDW, and it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Color Classics number 4. Now, as I'm sure I've said before, I actually didn't actually read the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when they originally came out, and since they've actually been redoing this from the start and doing it actually in color, this is where I've been actually picking them up. So they're 40 pages long, it's $3.99, so you're getting your money's worth with it, especially for an IDW book when they're generally always going to be around $3.99. But yeah, you know, I've got the first issue so far of it, but I've really been enjoying what I've read so far. So I'm going to keep up getting these color versions so I can just sort of see where it all came from. And since it's only, you know, this is the fourth issue into it, you can sort of jump on board as you need to there. So I'd really check it out if you haven't checked it out before. Okay, I'll let you go back to the guys.
Hey all, it's Joe with TaxAdviceGuys.com with my next pick of the month, coming out of the IDW section this time. Page 166, G.I. Joe, The Complete Collection, Volume 1. This is a hardcover that will be collecting Marvel's entire run of the G.I. Joe Real American Hero, as well as the G.I. Joe Special Missions series, in correct, proper reading order. Now, IDW just finished collecting the individual G.I. Joe Real American Hero series. A while back, they also did the Special Mission series separately. This hardcover will be collecting everything together, and it'll be doing it in proper reading order, so you won't have to go back and forth between the series. This, I think, is going to be a fantastic addition to any G.I. Joe fan. I, for one, am a huge fan. Really looking forward to this. It's $49.99 cover price. DCBS has it at a 35% discount, so it's $32.49 for the collection, and I think that's a great deal. It says that we get the first 12 issues, plus Hot Potato, Classified Files on the Pit, Breaker, Scarlet, Vamp, and more. Again, guys, can't recommend this highly enough. And with that, I'm going to hand it back over to the guys. I'll see you all for one more pick in just a bit.
And from Image Comics on page 186, we've got Happy Number 1, with a story by Grant Morrison and art and cover by Derek Robertson, who you might remember from The Boys. Meet Nick Sachs, a corrupt, intoxicated ex-cop-turned-hitman, adrift in a stinking twilight world of casual murder and betrayal. With a hit gone wrong, a bullet in his side, the cops and the mob on his tail, and a monstrous child killer in a Santa suit on the loose, Nick and his world will be changed forever this Christmas by a tiny blue horse called Happy. This one has great potential to be just really off-kilter. I'm really looking forward to seeing a creator-owned work from Grant Morrison. So I've got Happy Number 1 on my pull list. And on page 221, we have Skull Kickers Number 18, Son of Tavern Tales. Skull Kickers is a great series created by Zim Zubkovich, known as Jim Zub also. And every six issues, he has five-issue story arcs. And in issue number six, he did a Tavern Tale story that had other writers and artists coming in and doing short stories. And then he continued that after the second five-issue story arc in issue 12. And now it's a tradition where every sixth issue, we have one of these Tavern Tale stories, and that's what we're getting here. And we have people lining up now that want to do these stories. We've got John Layman and Rob Guillory from Chew doing a story here. We've got Justin Jordan and Trad Moore from The Strange Talent of Luther Strode. Blair Butler, who wrote Heart, and many more that are just kind of lined up to do stories for Skull Kickers. And I have an interview with Jim Zub. We're talking primarily about his Pathfinder series that I'll talk about in a little bit coming up from Dynamite, but we also talk about Skull Kickers. So I wanted to remind people, this is kind of a fun take on the fantasy genre, whereas Pathfinder's more of a straight, serious high fantasy type of take. So if you're interested, give it a look and give it a listen. And that's on Friday, or actually the interview episode already came out last Friday as you listen to this, so you should be seeing that in your feed if you're subscribed to the podcast and probably have already listened to it.
Hello, Trevor Chapman here from Brampton, Ontario, Canada, producer of the Monarchs Comic Briefing Podcast, and my first pick for the July 2012 previews for comics shipping in and around September of that same year starts on page 12 and 13 of the Marvel Comics Previews insert, Thanos, the Final Threat, and Thanos Quest, reprinting two instances in the history of Thanos, as written by Jim Starlin, probably the best writer to have fleshed out Thanos and his mad ways. The Final Threat, which is collecting Avengers Annual number 7 and Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 2, is the culmination of the 1977 Marvel Adam Warlock and Thanos escalating battle. Basically, Thanos is trying to kill half the universe to make his lover Death happy, and Adam Warlock is doing everything in his power to prevent that from happening. The Thanos Quest is the written by Jim Starlin and drawn by Ron Lim, and it's the Thanos actually going about and collecting the six Infinity Gems that become part of the Infinity Gauntlet, which leads to the great storyline of the Infinity Gauntlet. Thanos obviously was seen as the reveal at the end of the Avengers movie, so he will be in the Marvel Universe storyline somehow. Whether he'll be a threat to the Avengers or whether he'll be a threat to one of them and then the Avengers will come in, who knows? But they couldn't have picked very many better villains than Thanos and his mad quest at a nihilist world and galaxy to court, you know, death, which is a weird premise. Anyways, I'll be back in a bit.
Hey guys, it's Damien here again from TalesFromTheWarzone.com. I'll throw that one in for once. This is my next pick for the month, which is actually in the Marvel section, which is Daredevil number 18, written by Mark Waid, art by Chris Samnee, and covered by Paolo Rivera. I've actually been really enjoying what actually Mark has been doing with Daredevil. It's sort of a new life to the character. To be honest, when I first started off with Daredevil, I had the end of the Frank Miller run, and then I went through all the Brian Michael Bendis side of things, so I liked the dark brooding sort of side of Daredevil there, but this has been sort of a lighter view, but I stuck with it just to see what it would be like, and yeah, I've really been loving it. The reason I'm pointing out this one for you, it's actually the start of a new story there, so it's as it says here, the biggest Daredevil story begins here. So there's a new menace coming to New York, the killer called Coyote, and how sane is Matt Murdock? So this is going to be interesting to see where they go with this, but if you've been thinking about it and you haven't picked it up, this is going to be a jumping on point for you. Okay, I'll let you go back to the guys.
And from Marvel this month, on pages 34 and 35 of the Marvel catalog, we've got a crossover between Fantastic Four number 610 and FF number 22, written by Jonathan Hickman, with art on the Fantastic Four side by Ryan Stegman and by Nick Dragotta on the FF side. We've got the Fantastic Four dealing with the fallout of the Wizard returning to claim his son, future Foundation member Bentley number 23. We have to witness the fallout between Bentley 23 and his father. Bad father, worse son. I've been loving what Hickman has been doing with the Fantastic Four franchise, and as he starts wrapping up his Fantastic Four story, I'm in it for everything he writes. So join us with Fantastic Four number 610 and FF number 22.
Hello, Trevor Chapman here again, and my next pick is on page number 40. One of the Marvel Previews insert, and that would be Disney Princess Magazine, 36 pages, $4.99, and 8 by approximately 11 inches. The reason I'm pointing this out is because I have three young daughters, all of which, of course, are huge into Disney princesses, and I think this is a great way to combine their love for Disney princesses with my love of comics, which, of course, was the whole point of Disney deciding to purchase Marvel in the first place. So, for anybody who has young girls out there who are enamored by the Disney princesses and want to get them something along the lines of the great comic stuff that we all like to read, I suggest that you give this a shot. I think this is the first in what will be probably many issues of this series. Hello, Trevor Chapman here again, and my next pick is on page 46 of the Marvel Previews insert. That would be Gambit number 3. Now, I was going to bring this to everyone's attention when Gambit was first solicited, but I was unable, I was moving, so my computer was torn down and I had no luck. So here I am bringing Gambit number 3 to your attention, hopefully so that you can go get 1 and 2 off the rack and then pre-order number 3 accordingly. I've been a big fan of Gambit since his first appearance in the Uncanny X-Men, oh, those many years ago. He's a wisecracking, smooth-talking, charismatic Cajun who is a master thief and is also a mutant who can charge up stuff and throw it at you, and, you know, using something as ordinary and plain as a, you know, playing card and create destructive power. I think he's always had a lot of potential. He's got a lot of interesting backstory. I've liked I like the original Gambit miniseries that was out in the 80s that explained his wife and her problem and the thieves and the assassins. And I think this storyline is going to go back to that kind of storytelling. And if you're into that and you're into Gambit, then definitely give it a consideration. Trevor Chapman here again, and my next pick is on page 56 of the Marvel Previews insert, and that would be Fury Max, issue number 6. Now, again, like Gambit, I would have liked to have brought this up months ago when it was first solicited, but Garth Ennis and Goran Parlov are doing an awesome job of recreating a very gritty 70s John Cassavetes, Lee Marvin, Sam Peckinpah war story. It follows the life and times of Nick Fury after leaving World War II. Issue 1 starts with him being in French Indochina and the big fight that went on for Vietnam to try to earn its freedom in the 50s. And it basically is progressing its way through various aspects of war-torn world, with Nick Fury finding himself in the middle of it. There's no superpowers, there's no capes, there's no special anything. It's just war, and it's done with that intensity and ferocity that war should be done with, recognizing that war is a necessary evil and is an evil. I think anybody who's big into war stories that don't have a supernatural or metaphysical or time lost basis, you know, dinosaurs or whatever, really find this Fury Max comic when the trade comes out for the first bunch that's collected. Pick that up and start picking up with this issue. I don't think there's anything that you'll miss jumping in at this point, and it's well worth the reading, and it's really, really, really well done. And this is coming from a guy who's not big into war stuff, so you gotta, you know, it's got something going for it there.
And from Action Lab on page 232, we've got Princeless, Short Stories for Warrior Women, number 1. This is the first of a 2-issue set of short stories written by Jeremy Whitley with art by various female creators. This Eisner-nominated story is back, and we've got a 40-page book that's a perfect jumping-on point for new readers as they wait for the second miniseries to come out. I have a conversation with Jeremy Whitley in the Friday interview episode that we'll be able to talk about a little bit more in depth on Princeless, but it is a great all-ages comic, especially good for anyone who's got young girls in the family, that they can read this themselves or you can read it to them. Highly recommended series, and it is 24 pages, and the regular cover price is $3.99. Also on page 232, also from Action Lab, and also written by Jeremy Whitley, is The Order of Dagonet number 1. This one's got art and cover by Jason Strutz. When ancient mythological creatures of ancient Britain return, the call goes out to England's knights for help. Unfortunately, the call is answered by an aging rock god, a classically trained actor, a writer of boy wizard books, and a pop star in funny glasses. Get this oversized first issue and get introduced to the magical world of Great Britain. In the interview I have with Jeremy that's coming up on Friday, I also talked to him about the Order of Dagonet. It's really a fun take on the fact that in the past in Britain, the knights were warriors and they'd be able to help you out in a time of crisis. And nowadays it seems like the people who end up being knights are musicians and actors and the like, who are pretty much useless in a fight. So we're going to see what happens here. The art style on this is very unique. It's kind of a mixed media style. It looks kind of a very watercolory type of look to it. Very unique art, but if you look at the cover of this book, either in the online solicits that we have pointed to from the forum, or in the forum thread, or in the previous catalog itself, you can really see a sample of Jason's art in the cover of this book. It looks really fun. This was a self-published book, but it's really hard to get your hands on those old self-published issues if you weren't around where those were being sold locally on the East Coast. So I'm looking forward to this presentation from Action Lab of this and seeing the story continue on past where it was able to make it in the self-published days. Check this out, and if you want to get this, make sure you let your comic shop know.
Hey guys, it's Damien here with my last pick for the month, which is Mouse Guard, Legends of the Guard, Volume 1, Leatherbound Hardcover. Now, Mouse Guard's one that I sort of jumped on the bandwagon when the hardcovers started coming out for it, and I've really enjoyed the ones that I've seen. To be honest, I've picked up the first two, and apart from that, just the Free Comic Book Day one that came out last year. So I saw this and thought, you know, I should be actually getting some more of these ones, and this is stories that I actually haven't picked up. So this is one I'm recommending there. It's $39.95. Now it's 144 pages, so that's actually due to the leather band, I would say, for it. But to be honest, Mouse Guard's one that I really enjoy. It's one that I sit down with my kids and read, and you know, it's one that, you know, I reckon it's worth the money there for it. So this is just one that I'm going to point out for it. If they start doing all of them in this sort of thing, I'll probably end up picking them all up this way. But yeah, I thought I'd point it out to everyone because this is one that I really want to pick up. Okay then, I'll let you go back to the guys and I'll talk to you all next month.
Hello, Trevor Chapman here again, and on page 252 in the Avatar section, you will find Fashion Beast, number one of a monthly series by Alan Moore and Facundo Percio. It appears that Alan Moore wrote a screenplay in the 80s that never got picked up by any production house, and therefore Avatar has decided to publish it comic book serial format. I'm a huge fan of Alan Moore. Just finished reading The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and the 2009, and it's worth the wait. You sometimes have to wait because Alan Moore is not always punctual with his comics, and it's not always his fault. It's the artist as well, because Lord knows Alan Moore is very demanding of his artists in what he's expecting on each and every panel and page. But it's great stuff. Alan Moore hasn't written anything that I haven't liked. I'm more than willing to follow this. And Avatar is a great publisher, and they've done him great good with Neonomicon and various other things. So if you're an Alan Moore fan and you want to keep up on something he wrote that didn't see video print, check this out. Hello, Trevor Chapman here again, and my next pick is on page 254, again in the Avatar section, and this would be Ferals number 8. Now, I'm bringing up Ferals. Unfortunately, it's at number 8. I didn't get a chance necessarily to bring it up before, but this is a really, really good comic written by David Lapham, drawn by Gabriel Andrade. It's an excellent horror comic focusing around a type of horror creature that is not often focused, or not enough in my opinion. Zombies are done to death, and vampires have become sparkly now, which is just wrong. This is about werewolves, and this is werewolves done right. It's gory, it's bloody, it's nasty, it's violent. John, stay away from this because you won't like it at all. It's got all the elements of horror, and it's really, really well done. I think anybody who likes horror, likes werewolves, likes really graphic depictions of just nasty creatures, go find Ferals, go grab the back issues, go grab the trade, start picking it up here, start reading it, and just follow it. It's really, really entertaining. And it's Avatar, so it's bloody and nasty. It basically tells the story of a sheriff in the Midwest of the United States who has a dalliance with a woman that he meets in the bar, and that leads to him being infected with lycanthropy, and now he's finding out just what that means for him and his family and the other people who happen to have the same disease, and it's just really, really well done. So I definitely suggest you pick it up. Hello, Trevor Chapman here again, and on page 265, Boom Studios is offering Planet of the Apes, Cataclysm, number one, written by Karina Becko and Gabriel Hardman. This is the first issue of a brand new ongoing series, and for anybody who's a big fan of the Planet of the Apes world mythology, the movies, the TV series, the, you know, whatever, this does a great job of keeping the tone and the feel and the essential elements without necessarily overblowing it or making it, you know, just wrong. They've done a very good job of staying true to the source material. If you're a big fan of the Planet of the Apes, you would do yourself a lot of good in picking up this series and you know, seeing what Boom is made of it. If you can't get enough of it and you don't want the new reinventions of the Planet of the Apes, go back to the original, go back to this and pick it up. It's really, really good stuff. Just want to say thanks to Bob and John for allowing us to phone in these submissions and suggestions of what people should buy. I actually found two things by going through the previews in order to prepare for this call that I would have missed otherwise, so I think that's makes it worth my while right then and there, and I hope you guys find stuff as well. Keep up the great podcast, gentlemen, and keep us educationally entertained, and we'll talk to everyone hopefully in a fortnight. All right, bye now.
Next up on page 276, we've got Peter Cannon, Thunderbolt, number one from Dynamite Entertainment. This is written by Steve Darnell and Alex Ross, and art is by Jonathan Lau. Peter Cannon is a world-famous author and international celebrity and the superhero known as Thunderbolt, acknowledged far and wide as the man who saved the world from destruction. Unfortunately, he has little interest in fame and even less interest in people, and the piece he has created is based on an illusion. Now, as old and new enemies plan to destroy his efforts, unaware of the secret he carries, Peter Cannon must fight to keep his peace and preserve his own existence while fending off deadly foes and mysterious admirers. We've got co-writer Alex Ross and Steve Darnell telling us a story of a hero who discovers that sometimes things aren't always what they seem. And we've got a foreword by Mark Waid, and we also have Peter Cannon's never-before-published origin story by the creator of Peter Cannon, Pete Morisi. Now, Peter Cannon is a character that's from way back in the 50s, and DC actually put out a 12-issue limited series of Peter Cannon back in the early 90s. You can probably find, if you poke around looking for it, kind of a cool revival here. I'm guessing this is in the public domain at this point, or it's been licensed by Dynamite. Dynamite tends to do a lot of series based on either licensed or public domain characters, and I'm really curious to see how they approach Peter Cannon. Very classic character, and the first issue for me is definitely worth checking out. I'm going to be putting the number one issue in my tryout mode, which means I'm going to get it, I'm going to read it, we'll review it on the show, and then we'll let you know what we think.
This is Derek once again from the upcoming new podcast, The Comics Alternative, and my next pick of the month appears on pages 278 and 279 in the Dynamite section. Damsels, written by Lee Moore and John Repien, art by Anik, covers by J. Scott Campbell and Sean Chen. The catalog description goes this way. Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, The Little Mermaid, and Snow White come together with other damsels in a new adventure filled with danger and intrigue. In Damsels, the alluring princesses of classic fairy tales take up arms to save their kingdoms from war. Rediscover the darkness at the heart of fairy tales, and why there will be no happy ever after. You know, I want to check this out. I'm not sure what to expect. I really like comic series that take classic fairy tales, storybook figures, and manipulates the story and the characters in quite interesting and even contemporary ways. That's one of the reasons why Fable is still one of my favorite comic book series. And I'm not sure exactly where Damsels is going to go. Is it going to go more in the direction of what Bill Willingham does with Fables? And in that case, I would love it. On the other hand, is it going to be something like Grimm's Fairy Tales by Zenoscope? where there, yes, there is a, you know, the fairy tale twist on things, but the comic is more an excuse for cheesecake illustrations than otherwise. If that's the case, I don't know if we need another. I think Grimm's Fairy Tales is enough, and its many spinoffs. But I'm willing to check this out. Damsels by Lee Moore and John Repien, art by Anik. And you'll find this on pages 278 and 279. In fact, there's even an interview with Lee Moore and John Repien on page 278, so you can learn a little bit more about the series before investing in it. But I think it's worth checking out. At least I will. And now, back to the guys.
Next up, we've got Pathfinder number 2, written by Jim Zubkovich with art by Andrew Huerta. Jim, also lovingly known as Jim Zub, has been delighting at least me with his Skull Kickers fantasy comic over at Image, and now he's doing the licensed Pathfinder comic from Dynamite. And this you can find on page 281. I forgot and didn't talk about the number one issue last month, so I wanted to make amends and catch issue number 2 here this month. This is Dungeons and Dragons, essentially. Pathfinder is an tabletop role-playing game system by Paizo Publishing. It's been around, they've been developing it for 10 years, and it's the largest open playtest in the history of tabletop gaming, and it's basically, in my opinion, an improvement on the Dungeons and Dragons system from Wizards of the Coast. The fourth edition of Dungeons and Dragons was a disaster, and we've actually, in the campaign I play in, we've switched from fourth edition to Pathfinder and have been extremely happy, not looking back. But that's the game. The actual comic, you know, it's set in this fantasy setting, so we've got goblins of Varisia sing twisted songs as their blood boil with ferocious rage and mystic power. Valeros and his companions may discover the forces behind the goblin tribe's newfound strength, but stopping it's another matter entirely. So, you know, this is a fantasy comic in a fantasy setting. It's got the bonus of having 5 pages of character profiles and Pathfinder role-playing game statistics, a removable playable tactical map, and other extras in each issue. So this is great for people who are gamers, and it's also great for people who are just fans of fantasy stories and fantasy art. And I fall into both categories, so I'm going to absolutely be checking this out. And I really trust Jim Zub as a writer, especially after reading what he's done on Skull Kickers. So I'm really, really looking forward to what he does here on Pathfinder, the comic book. Check it out.
Hi, this is Bill from Geek Brunch Podcast with my real first pick of the month on page 301 from Eva Inc. It is Siren, the Bewitching Art of Dan Brereton. This is Dan Brereton's second collection of art. The first came out last year, and it was called The Goddess. Goddess and the Monster? Is that what it was? This one, well, it's a compelling new collection of illustrated works by Dan Brereton, featuring subjects from pulp heroes to gothic horror, and of course, fantastic ladies. And it doesn't say here, but I know I saw on his Facebook page that something that is in this volume, or this version, that wasn't in the last one is he's putting some descriptions for each of the pictures in the book. So that was something that people want, or after the first one came out, people were saying that they would have liked to see some information up from him on each of the pictures, so he's going to include that in this one. This comes in both a signed and numbered edition and a sketch edition. The signed and numbered is it's 8x11, 80 pages, $34.99, and the sketch edition, I think, is higher than the last sketched edition, which it's $100, and I think it's limited to 200 copies. I don't know, personally, that's kind of too large of a jump from the signed and numbered edition to the sketch edition. But if you're a completist, or I guess if you want the additional sketch in there, if it's worth the money to you. But I'm definitely going to be picking this one up because I enjoy Dan's work, especially his work on Nocturnals, so I tend to be a completist when it comes to his stuff. So, yeah, that's on page 301. Hi, this is Bill from Geek Brunch Podcast with my first pick of the month. It is on page 302 from Fantagraphics. It's called Black Lung by Chris Wright. I hadn't heard of this before, but it intrigued me when I read the description and looked it up a little online. So part of the description here that intrigued me, it says, sweeping and visually startling tale of a man determined to commit as many acts of evil as possible in order to ensure reuniting with his dead wife in hell. It is a story of violence, immorality, fortitude, and redemption. It is unquestionably one of the most impressive graphic novel debuts in recent years. So, just the thought of, or the concept of a man who's trying to do evil so he can go to hell intrigues me. And like I said, I looked this up online to try and find some of it, and the artwork is very detailed in terms of the hatchwork in the art. It's very complex, I guess you could say. I found a pre-review by Chris Schweitzer, I believe is how it's pronounced, who does the Krogan series of graphic novels. And he said something kind of intriguing. He said, let me find it here. It is one of the best books I've ever read. Do I enjoy reading it? No. It hurts me to read it, both in my mind and my sensibilities. But it's a damn good book. I hope it becomes available very, very soon. So, high praise indeed. And there was one line, he included a couple of panels, and there was one that just grabbed me. And once I saw this, I kind of said, okay, yeah, this is my kind of book. So it's a strange looking character on a ship, on a boat, and he's holding a knife and he's covered in blood, and this guy comes up to him and says, why are you bleeding? And the guy says, feeling both sides. When you push the object into other meat, you feel one side, the pushing, the giving. There's so many things you miss only being on that side of the cutting. Yeah. That's creepy and awesome, so I'm definitely going to check this one out. Again, Black Lung from Fantagraphics. It's a hardcover, 9x12, so a little oversized, I guess. Check it out!
Hey all, it's Joe with Tax Advice Guys, my last pick for the month. On page 312 of the previous catalog, The Tower Chronicles, Volume 1, Geist Hawk graphic novel, written by Matt Wagner, art by Simon Beasley. First cover is by Jim Lee. Tag says, He Lives to Kill the Dead, written by Matt Wagner and developed with Thomas Tull, the executive producer of 300. The Tower Chronicles is the tale of John Tower, a supernatural bounty hunter who tracks down the creeping shadows that the modern world has all but forgotten. His harrowing mission leads him across the globe and into the darkest recesses of mankind's most dangerous places to banish a wide variety of poltergeist demons and other unfathomable evils to free his troubled patrons. This is actually going to be a series of graphic novels that comes out bi-monthly, and it's going to be a trilogy. The first trilogy is 4 volumes. Every other month we're going to get a new volume. 72 pages, 7x10 size. It's $7.99. DCBS has it at a 45% discount for $4.39. This is the chance to get in on the ground floor of a new Matt Wagner property. If you didn't get in on Grendel, you can get in now and check this one out. I highly recommend it, and with that I turn it back over to the guys.
This is Derek once again from the upcoming new podcast, The Comics Alternative. And my next pick of the month appears on pages 316, 317, and 318 of the previews catalog. And it is Chris Ware, Building Stories, the hardcover. The catalog describes it as Building Stories follows the inhabitants of a three-flat Chicago apartment house, a 30-year-old woman who has yet to find someone with whom to spend the rest of her life, a couple, possibly married, who wonder if they can bear each other's company for another minute, and finally, an elderly woman who never marries and is the building's landlady. The scope, the ambition, the artistry, and emotional heft of this project are beyond anything we have seen yet from this artist or in the medium. I really love Chris Ware's work, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, of all the things that are in this month's catalog, this is the book that I'm most excited about. It's a rarity that we would get, I guess, what you would call a coherent graphic novel from Chris Ware. Usually we get every year or so another issue of the Acme series that he's been doing for a number of years. And lately in the Acme series, he's included bits and pieces of the building stories. Apparently now he has completed what he sees as a coherent graphic novel. Chris Ware's work, if you're not aware of it, then shame on you. It's very different. I think it's very challenging. It's hard to read. I've had friends of mine who are comics fans for years say that it takes them forever to get through Chris Ware's works. Try saying that three times fast. And there's a reason for that. I mean, very complex things that he packs into his narratives. Many times he writes and illustrates in ways that resist traditional ways of reading comics. And so he challenges the medium at the same time that he participates in the medium. One of the things you'll find in the recent catalog also is an interview with Chris on pages 317 and 318. Quite an in-depth interview, and this is important because Chris Ware is a rather shy guy and not known to give many interviews. So I think this is a coup for previews. It's worth checking out, and that's an understatement. Chris Ware, Building Stories, the hardcover, and this is by Pantheon. Look out for it, read it, and appreciate it. And now, back to Bob and John. This is Derek once again from the upcoming brand new podcast, The Comics Alternative. And my last pick of the month is on page 320 of the previews catalog, and it's coming out from Oni Press, Stumptown, The Case of the Baby in the Velvet Case, issue number one. The catalog describes it this way. From Eisner Award-winning writer Greg Rucka and acclaimed artist Matthew Southworth comes a new Stumptown mystery. When Mim Bracca, guitar player for the Portland-based rock group Tailhook, returns home from a long tour, she finds not everything made it back with her. Can private investigator Dax Perios track down her missing baby? You know, just recently, as fate would have it, I was rereading the original series, the miniseries Stumptown, that came out several years ago. And in that last issue in the miniseries, Greg Rucka writes that he's going to be coming up with more Stumptown stories in the days to come. Now, it's been a few years since the first Stumptown, and I was starting to wonder if perhaps Greg Rucka had just let the Stumptown story go, if he had other projects, too many other projects occupying his time. I didn't know what the deal was, and so I was very pleased to find in this month's catalog The Case of the Baby and the Velvet Case. So I'm looking forward to checking that out. If you like detective, noir, thriller, intrigue, even espionage narratives, then you know Greg Rucka's work. Not only has he done this with the previous Stumptown story, but also in the award-winning Queen and Country in Whiteout. And this promises to be just as engaging and follow in the footsteps of his earlier work. So again, check out on page 320, Stumptown, The Case of the Baby in the Velvet Case by Greg Rucka and Matthew Southworth. Also, in several weeks, be sure to check out The Comics Alternative, a brand new podcast hosted by me and my colleague, Andy Kunkka. Bob and John, back to you.
And next up on page 341 is Exo Manowar number 5 from Valiant. This is a $3.99 comic, 32 pages, full color. It's part of the new Valiant line. So far, they've been doing a little bit of a slow build on the story for the first two issues, but it's been good. With this fifth issue, they're starting the new story arc, Exo Manowar versus Ninjak. Yeah, that's right, they're bringing back Ninjak. Now, Ninjak was one of the kind of second major round of characters they did, and one that really radically changed kind of when Acclaim took it over and you got kind of that Valiant 2.0 with the video game kind of take on characters. It's going to be interesting to see what take they've got on this character. And they're playing it close to the vest as far as I can tell so far, which is cool. I want to see how this works in the comics, not through some interview or some teaser image or something like that. Given that we've already gotten word that this Exo is going to be using, you know, kind of a sword thing versus, you know, the ray guns, because he thinks more in sword terminology than gun terminology, given, you know, he's basically from pre Gunpowder era. It's going to be fun to see a good sword fight between these two. Looking forward to it. Like I said, the Valiant stuff so far I've been really pleased with. The fact that they're starting a second arc on the fifth issue, so four issue arcs for the most part, seems good. I really enjoyed the old Valiant stuff, even a lot of the old Acclaim stuff. And this reboot of the Valiant line looks very promising. This could be a very pivotal issue for that universe. So again, XO Manowar number 5 on page 341. Check it out.
Hi, this is Bill from Geek Brunch Podcast again. My next couple picks are on page 352 from Vertical Incorporated. Vertical is a company that has been bringing out manga in America, reprinting stuff that was originally published in Japan, and they've kind of tended towards the upper end, the more, I was going to say mature, I don't know if that's the right word or not, but they published a lot of Tezuka books, like they published Blackjack, they're publishing Drops of God, which is actually another volume that is solicited this month. But what I am talking about today, and what I am most excited about, is something they are reprinting, a book that has come out in America before. It was actually originally published by Tokyo Pop. They brought out 5 volumes of this in a smaller, in the more traditional manga size format. It is Paradise Kiss. This is a book by one of my favorite manga creators, Ai Yazawa, who is most well known for her very popular series, Nana, which ran for 21 volumes before stopping, which is one of my favorite mangas. Paradise Kiss is actually the first one of Ai's works that I read and really enjoyed. Like I said, I have the Tokyo Pop versions, but Vertical is publishing them in a slightly larger format, 6x9. And the coolest thing is they're doing it's a new translation, so that should be good. I actually looked back at the translation in the original one and was like, yeah, I guess they could update this translation because it was a little shaky. It was good when I first read it. So Paradise Kiss is about the world of high fashion and high drama collide. It starts out with a girl who meets this group of kind of underground fashion designers and gets pulled into their world. This is very much a shoujo book, which is a kind of a teen romance kind of book, I guess it is. But it's very well done. I really, really enjoy her stuff, so check it out if that sounds good. The other one I'm going to add on this is also from Vertical. It's The Limit, Volume 1 graphic novel by Keiko Tsunobu. It says, the award-winning author returns with another comic about the tragedies of school bullying and high school clique culture. A girl's survival story where looks and popularity may be the downfall of one team when a traffic accident almost wipes out her entire class on a high school class on a field trip. The 5 remaining survivors must settle their social differences to survive in the Japanese wilderness. Now, I know nothing of this book other than that description. I'm going to have to still go online and do some research into it. But I like the juxtaposition of the typical high schooler dealing with high school culture and then having these kids out in the wilderness having to survive. So that sounds like it's up my alley. And it being from Vertical gives me some amount of confidence that it's a book worth reading. So I'm going to definitely check that one out as well. So both of those are from Vertical. And I recommend one of them and I'm looking forward to learning more about the other. Thanks.
So we're recording this part a little earlier than usual because I'm heading off to con. Haven't actually seen the DCBS order form yet, so my total here is kind of a rough one. I often put together a makeshift order form based on the consumer order form that Diamond releases. And just to go straight, 40% discount for the front half and like a 30 for the back half, which winds up being actually surprisingly accurate, even with the massive doorbusters the DCBS often does. My total is looking to be, not counting bags and boards and shipping, a little under $425, which is a little lower than it's been in some past months, a little higher than it's been in a few other past months. That's where it's looking at the moment. It could change radically before I put in the order, of course.
Well, mine came out at $408. It's one of the first times I remember mine being smaller than yours on this order size. You know, it's usually I have much more than I usually spend more than you.
You probably don't have much in the way of high ticket items then.
Yeah, there are not that many of them this month.
That's usually where our orders differ. I've got one or two this time, such as the Richard Castle Storm season premiere, or the premiere hardcover or whatever.
Let's put it this way. The last five items on my order form are like about $110 that I'm paying for them. So actually, if I take those five off, I've got about $300 of comics and trades.
That Castle hardcover I mentioned, that's the only thing I have that costs over $5. I tend not to get big ticket items. I mean, that's really where your total goes up so much. I mean, we also differ in you know, you're probably getting a lot more from Dark Horse than I am, certainly from Image. I mean, from Dark Horse, I'm only getting Ghost. They've hit a little bit of a dry spell with me. Sometimes I get more from Dark Horse than other months.
Yeah, I'm getting 2, 4, 6, 8 things from Dark Horse. One of them's for Steven, Axe Cop. So that's not for. So I'm getting like 7 for myself. And one of them's a Manara hardcover, so that's $36. I got a manga, Kurosagi, Corpse Delivery Service. You know, I'm actually a little lower on Image than in some months. I mean, I've been at some points, well, you know, up around 28 to 30, and I'm 25 this month. But, I mean, that's more than, you know, what really took a drop on me is IDW, which I'm down to 4.
Really?
Yeah.
With IDW, I am getting 7. The Star Trek Ongoing, the Next Gen, the Star Trek Doctor Who, Rocketeer, KISS, and Love and Capes.
Yeah, I'm getting the Star Trek, Doctor Who, Rocketeer, Love and Capes, and then I'm getting the Godzilla Half Century War, which is by James Stokoe, who I really enjoy his art and writing. So,
and how much are you getting from DC?
From DC, we got Before Watchmen.
Because I'm getting 71 through, items.
And on through Vertigo. I am getting 36.
So again, you've cut back a lot in that area, but I'm sure you more than make up for it in the fact you're getting probably a lot more Image books than I am. I'm only getting, I think, 19.
Well, I'm getting 25, so I'm not getting that many more Image books than you.
I've got a few that were on the fence, but I'm backing out of the Top Cow stuff in a lot of cases, not all. But Artifacts is gone by the wayside. Darkness I dropped. There's still a couple others that I'm enjoying, Magdalena and stuff, sufficiently to get it.
Yeah,
but
I,
you know,
I pulled out a Top Cow entirely.
That was one of those where when Ron Mars kind of left a lot of the other titles, it kind of, you know, they made too big of a change, and it gave me a jumping off point. I gave it a try for a bit. It just wasn't clicking with me as much. So it was easy to say, you know, okay, move on. And then through Marvel, I am getting 67 with a couple of, with about 4 maybes.
Now there's our big difference. Guess how many Marvel books I'm getting this month?
10, 8.
9, right in the middle.
I was close.
And that involves 2 issues of Amazing Spider-Man and 2 issues of Winter Soldier. So I'm getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different titles. But really, it's I'm getting Amazing Spider-Man and Avenging Spider-Man. So that's Spider-Man. So that's 3 titles. I'm getting Winter Soldier for 2 titles. I'm getting Fantastic Four and FF, Daredevil, and Fury Max. So I'm really only getting 1, 2, 3, 4, like 5 distinct things from Marvel.
That's, I mean, I can understand why. That's obviously going to make the Marvel section of the Weekly Comic Spotlight interesting going forward, but it's one of those things that I think once they lose readers on certain titles, it's hard to get somebody back on. Not saying it's impossible. I mean, you've repicked up a couple of things over time.
I mean, I dropped FF and I picked it back up. You know, I dropped Cap. You know, that's one of the big ones. And most of the Avengers stuff, I think it's just certain of their architects are not clicking with me. Probably the majority of their architects are not clicking with me. So unfortunately, since those guys write the majority of the Marvel books, it kind of leaves me out in the cold on the majority of the Marvel books.
Yeah, I could see where that would definitely be a problem if the people kind of steering the universe are going in a direction you don't like. How much are you getting from the back half?
Back half, I am getting, starting with Rachel Rising, on down through 33.
I'm getting 27 with a number of maybes.
34, sorry.
34, okay. There are a couple of things I need to kind of think about. Actually, not as many as I thought. A lot of the maybes are just which cover do I get on a few things. This is where an area, though, where it would be easy for me to increase what I'm getting. Just if people point out, hey, there's this indie book that you may have missed, you might like, you know. Because some of these things that I've got on my list, Executive Assistant Assassins, when that first volume of Executive Assistant Iris or whatever came out, didn't hit my radar. You know, there are a lot of things that have that opportunity. Because, I mean, obviously, if I'm only getting about 27 things in the entire back half of the catalog, a lot more things in there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, for me, I mean, I'm getting 33, so that's not significantly more than you're getting.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where really part of what I think we try to do here on the podcast, certainly part of what I try to do, is a matchmaking service, trying to hook people up with the stuff that they're likely to be interested in. Because it doesn't do anybody any good for somebody to spend money on a story they're just not going to like. Because it doesn't have the right kind of art, it's the wrong genre, it's the wrong storytelling style, whatever. And different people like different things. There's something out there for everybody, and can we help them find it? So that's why we do these episodes. We need your help to do that as listeners, to send in clips, to participate. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm only getting 113 comics this month, according to this, which is down 7 or so from last month for me.
I'm getting 193. That includes previews. And that's right around average. I looked back over the last 6 months or year when I was filling out that DC survey to find out how many I was buying every month because, well, they asked. And then it turned out they didn't want the full answer.
Yeah. Nielsen's doing a survey. I don't know if they're still doing it. We've got a thread on the forum about it, and they were asking about your buying habits. And when I entered in my, one of the questions was, how many comics a month do you buy? And I put in 120 because, that was about what I buy a month. And it said, what did it say? That's too many comics. I think that was the exact thing. It's like,
well, that number is too high or something.
Are you giving me an editorial remark about how many comic books I read? I guess you are, Nielsen. It would take 99, I guess, is the most it would take. It was not set up to do triple digits. Whoever set that system up was someone who would have programmed a system that would have crashed in the year 2000. They didn't like that answer, so I told them that.
How many have you bought in the last 6 months? My answer wouldn't fit there either. And I get I'm on the far end of the spectrum or whatever, but you'd think they'd want to know how high is high.
Yeah, what did you have something over 1,000? Because there I only put
for
in
the last 6 months?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because for me it was under 1,000, so it actually took my number. I think mine was probably, I figure 120 times 6 is, 720, right? So I put in 720 and it took it. So.
Well, I'm a handful under 200 a month.
Yeah, so you're probably 1,100 and some odd.
Yeah. So.
It said again, you buy too many comics.
No, I don't think so, but
Nielsen does.
So we're looking for more clips every month. Obviously, this is a listener participation exercise. Please send in stuff. We appreciate that every month, again, both to help us find stuff, help our listeners find stuff, and just to participate in the community.
And if you're interested and just want to be reminded, you can drop me a note at bob@comicbookpage.com, and I will add you to – I'll add your email, because I usually send out a reminder email about a week before the clips are due with a link to the thread on the forum that's got online solicits. And again, you don't need to buy Previews Catalog to submit a clip. Almost, you know, all the major publishers and a lot of the mid-tier, you know, and other publishers in the back half do have online solicits. I have one consolidated thread that I put up on the forum with links to probably 20 companies' solicits that are online that you can look at without buying a Previews Catalog. So you can, you know, browse through those, see if there's something that interests you, and record a clip based on that. So there's not a point of entry where you need to buy a Previews Catalog, even though we call it the Preview Spotlight.
And if you are a creator or work at a publishing company, feel free to send us the solicits directly or point to where they are on the web so we can be sure to include those. We're here to help, you know, sell comics. So, you know, if you're a creator and you want to talk to Bob on one of the interview things, let us know. If you want us to help promote your stuff, I mean, no guarantees, but, you know, we like to help comics sell. So yeah.
Let me know a couple of weeks before the Previews is coming out so we can schedule it. But I'm happy to do an interview with anyone that's got something coming out, you know, in the coming month that you want to give an extra push to. Just get a hold of me. Give us a little bit of time to schedule that. Since I work during the day on the West Coast, you know, it's something that we generally do in the evening, or, you know, when I talk to people on the East Coast, I can usually do something 9, 10 o'clock at night with those guys. But fortunately, you know, most artists and writers are up late working on stuff anyway, so they don't mind. Or I can do a weekend also.
Yeah. But, I mean, that gives us stuff for the interviews. That's a great way for people to get aware of really a lot more information about a property than can fit on a cover and a tiny, you know, few-sentence paragraph in Previews. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think it does it for me.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.